is Pearl Lamp Podcast. Today I'm in London and I'm very happy sitting beside this great curator, writer, journalist, whatever, Echo Asher. Can you just briefly talk about yourself?
Yeah, I like the whatever bit. I'm Echo Eschen. I'm a writer and a curator. I write about art chiefly. I curate exhibitions internationally. I write books. I like to think a lot about, I'll tell you what, look, a lot of the work I do, not exclusively, but often centers on Black life, on Black being, on Black presence and Black thinking. I'm interested in articulating the complexity of Black presence in the world.
But I think you are the right person to talk about it because you were the first Black editor of the Arena magazine. And then you are the first Black director of ICA here.
Yeah, I was the first Black editor of a mainstream newsstand magazine in the UK. The first Black director of a major public institution in the UK. I mean, all of, you know, some of these firsts, in a way, they say something about the nature of what might we call it social or structural change in a country like the UK. But in my role, in my past, in my history, this is some of the things I've done. Right now, I'm also chairman of the Fourth Plinth Commissioning Group, which decides the work that goes from the Fourth Plinth in Trafalgar Square, the most, I would say, the most consequential public art program in the UK.
Absolutely.
So,
By the way, for the audience to know, the Fourth Plinth is in the Trafalgar Square. So every year there is a choice of an artist to create an artwork for the Fourth Plinth.
Yeah.
And you are the chairman.
Yeah. And so that's included people like Yinka Shonabara, lots of historically significant contemporary artists. We run a program. But so all of these things I'm interested in because fundamentally I'm interested in the role of art, culture, identity, being, and how we can describe what significance those have, both in a wider public sense and also for us individually.
Hold on first. Okay. When you first started,
yeah,
how do you know that you want to be, you know, you're like an activist as well. Right. Yeah. So how do you know when you're growing up, you grew up in UK, right?
Yeah. So I was born in Britain. My family's from Ghana. I was born and brought up in Britain. Yeah.
So what makes you start being a writer, an art person, interested in culture?
So, I mean, look, this is a good question. In a way, I want to play that back to you for a moment, Paul, because look, I figure this is the thing. I'm interested in origin stories. So actually, look, I'm just going to do this deliberately. I will answer the question, but actually I want to hear your answer to that question just for a moment. Where do you start from?
My interest in art is actually, when I grew up, I was very good in painting. Mm-hmm. I do drawings, I do paintings, I do all that. It's also because when I was young, during my era, no one understand ADHD, mm-hmm. right? So I was jumping up and down and doing all these things. So from 3 years old, I was punished. I have to do Chinese calligraphy. Mm-hmm. So just for you to sit down and focus and learn patience. And then after that, I hate calligraphy. But then I went to school, so I started drawing, painting, and from calligraphy, they sent me from Chinese painting and all that. So when I was doing my A-level, so I wanted to study one less subject. So I did art, and my art was pretty good. Mm-hmm. So when I have the money, and then I went to graduate show. So I started collecting a little bit of art, looking at it, and then I went into the art business is by default or by coincidence, because when I went back to Hong Kong, I did not want to be joining my father's business, nor do I want to be an accountant or a lawyer. So I said, I will open a gallery. I will do something that they can't touch and they cannot influence me. They cannot do anything.
See, look, so thank you for that. Because in a way, it's an interesting illustration of the way that the personal falls into whatever we might call it, the professional. Mm. And I would say my story isn't necessarily that different to that. Different, but similar. In that, I grew up in Britain, but I also spent a couple of years when I was a small child, I think maybe from about, let's say about 2 or so till 5, my family went back to Ghana, where, you know, my parents came from. I lived in Ghana for a few years. And I remember coming back to Britain after that. I mean, very struck in a way by how strange Britain felt in the way it dealt with race or culture. Mm. I looked at it from an outsider's point of view. And I think...
Even at such a young age, you're very sensitive to that.
Yes.
Wow.
Because this... Britain's a kind of interesting place. People don't necessarily say what they mean a lot of the time. So you have to spend a lot of time trying to figure out, well, really what's going on. And so, I felt quite attuned to that from an early age, but it also was then quite an uncomfortable feeling, about, well, how do I stand here? What is it I'm hearing? What is it I'm seeing? All of this made me think about, well, how can I find a way to live and to be without being oppressed or othered in this environment? Early on, I wanted to be a writer because that seemed...
From early on?
Yeah, because it seemed to me a way to be able to say what I felt rather than necessarily have to listen to what someone else said about me. If you're a black person, basically people are always talking about you in some form or other. You walk into a room, someone's already decided who you are. They've already decided you're some sort of threat or some sort of outsider, some sort of alien presence. I was very aware of that, and I wanted to have my own say in a debate about who I was or who other black people were. I remember when I was about 17 or something like that, I went into my local library. I was in the reference section in my local library, and I came across this publication. It was just the kind of pamphlet. It was about British cinema, and it was describing a kind of early wave of black film. This is in the 1980s, late 80s or early 90s. And I picked up this pamphlet and it changed my life. Because in there, I found the writings of a number of different scholars. Stuart Hall, who was an important theorist in cultural theory, Paul Gilroy. I discovered this world. It turned out that there were scholars and academics and artists and writers who were thinking about some of these
issues
that had been on my mind since I was a child. And I had no idea that you could extend thinking beyond the personal to think culturally or politically about
these. Do you talk to your parents about that?
Do you know what? Not so much. In that, like I said, I thought I was on my own lonely path in a way, because also when you're a teenage, you're trying to figure stuff out. So discovering Stuart Hall at that age was a revelation to me, because I realized that you could write, and you could write with sensitivity, you could write with acuity, but you could also write about the culture, about the world we lived in. You could write not just fiction, as it were, you could write theory, and that theory wasn't abstract. That theory had a direct relationship, in my case, to how I lived, to how I looked, to how I saw the world. And that was a revelation to me. And from that moment on, origin story, from that moment on, well, two things happened. One, I actually stole that pamphlet from the library because I wanted to keep it with me because it made such an impression on me. And then after that, I realized, well, actually, look, okay, you're allowed to write about the things you're interested in, the things you're passionate about. And that writing has its own significance. So from there, I did a bunch of things, went to university. But I started writing from an early age about popular culture, about fashion, about music, about hip hop, about style. I started writing for a magazine called The Face, which was
Who won't know The Face?
It's a very significant style magazine of its time. I'd grown up reading The Face. I started writing for The Face. And the thing that I took to that was the idea that you could write about fashion and it could mean something. It could mean something not just in terms of, the significance of the thing in itself, but it could be also a way about talking about culture, about talking about society, about talking about who we are and how we live. And that's really how I started.
Wow. And then did your parents say anything that, oh my God, what are you doing? Can you make a living?
Of course writing? They did.
Yeah, like all parents,
like,
right?
Immigrant parents.
Yes. Whether Africans, Chinese, they all the same.
Of course. Of course. So I went to the London School of Economics, there's a degree in politics and history. I came out of there. I said, I want to be a freelance journalist.
Oh my God. Can you imagine your parents? You went to LSU and you want to go to being a journalist. You don't want to be a banker. You know what?
No, I don't want to do that. So, yeah. So, I mean, they were skeptical, but also, I mean, do you know, this is where I wanted to be. I wasn't interested in anything else. By then, I'd started writing for The Face while I was a student.
Oh, you started writing for The Face while you were a student?
Yeah. From when I was about...
Very impressive.
18, 19, something like that. Because again, if you look around, what I felt was that there are stories all around. There were stories about culture, fashion, youth culture. It seemed to me that exactly this thing, that something very simple, the choices people made about how they dressed, about where they went, about the music they listened to, these things are not inconsequential. These things deserved attention and enthusiasm. So I wrote about the place I went. I wrote about the clubs I went to. I wrote about the clothes that I saw people wearing. And so, yeah, so by the time
this is all culture.
Exactly. So by the time I graduated, I was already doing this. And I carried on doing that. And then I became an editor at The Face magazine. And then I became the editor of Arena, which is a men's style magazine, which is a sister magazine to The Face, published by the same company. So by the time I was in my 20s, I was editing these magazines. From doing all of that to thinking about art, it's not very different.
Exactly.
It's not, you know, the material is different, but the what you might be able to discover from within that work remains the same. So the issue is, it's not the thin, it's what you see within the thin. It's the worlds that you discover. It's the worlds that
you're
artists...
You're absolutely right, because we're talking about contemporary culture.
Exactly.
Contemporary artists is reflecting contemporary culture.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
As a black person, when you're growing up, have you ever feel that you're being discriminated?
Oh, of course. I mean...
And that is why you have this whole mission.
Yeah,
that you want
to
correct this. You want to clarify this.
Yes. Yeah. Look, in a way, it's about survival. Because the question is, if you live in a society that seems often hostile to your presence, how do you live? How do you walk? How do you survive and not be defeated and not be diminished and not be confined and not be othered? My response would be to suggest that you speak, that you write, that you find the words that allow you to clear space and define and determine yourself on your own terms. That's the goal.
But, you know, the world has changed now, right? Now we're talking about diversity and inclusivity. And although Mr. Trump has just deleted the whole thing, right? So obviously, you know, with all these big changes, you will find yourself right in the center of these sentiments.
Mm.
Don't you think the whole world is now not just that, not about discrimination, it's about celebrating?
Look, I mean, the thing I'm most interested in is how can we speak with sensitivity and empathy
of course, empathy is really important. Yeah,
of each other. My thing is a lot of the focus of my work, not exclusively, but a lot of the focus of my work is around, as we've been saying, Black culture and identity. Yeah. And I don't do this not only to say that this is work that deserves attention and is in many cases extraordinary, but also because I'm interested in living in a world where we get to acknowledge each other's presence, each other's particularity, each other's the richness and complexity of our interior lives. That seems to me a valid pursuit.
I saw, most of the exhibitions you've done, you are focusing in African diaspora.
Mm-hmm.
But you haven't really focused in artists of Africa.
Mm, that's not
so.
Mm-hmm.
So why?
Well, I mean, it's not entirely true. But yes and no. I've done exhibitions of African photography and so on. But to go with the tenor of your position, I guess because you know, in a way, on a personal level, at one point, I spent time thinking. I did think at one point, look. Am I allowed to talk about Africa in that? I don't, I've lived in Africa for a couple of years as a small child, but I lived in Britain the majority of my life. Mm. So what is it I can say about Africa that someone who's based on the continent can't say better? What I do know about is the African diaspora.
Yeah,
what I do know about is the sensibility of belonging to
because you are part
more
of them.
Than one yeah. place at the same time. And I've actually come round, actually, in the end, to thinking also about Africa and to understanding, at least from my point of view, that in a way, even if you're born or based on the continent, we all come from more than one place.
Of course.
Simultaneously. So, yeah, look, there's room still to do more. There's still to do this. I mean, I actually now, I've done a series of exhibitions in Ghana. I did a show. I've done a couple of large group shows in Ghana and Accra.
In Ghana?
Yeah, in Accra. Yeah, in Ghana for the last couple of years, which bring together Ghanaian artists and African artists with international artists from across the diaspora. And again, this is like, you raise an interesting point in as much as one of the things that I am interested in, let's say being cautious about is notions of authenticity.
Yeah.
So when I do a show in Ghana, it's not just about Ghana. It's not just about Africa. It's still really about how I think anyone of African origin based on the continent, based internationally, in a way you're in a conversation. You're in a conversation
of
about.
Of course, it is a cultural exchange. It's cultural dialogue.
Exactly. So if I do a show in Ghana, that's not just about Ghana. It's not just about Africa. And I hold to that. That seems to me.
I think it's much more interesting, actually. And actually, because first time when I went to Nigeria, I was being told the word called Africa. He said, there's nothing called Africa. Even in Nigeria, we have so many tribes.
Exactly.
And we are all so different. We don't even have one common. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, you learn. Because I think you are, you know, each of the tribes of each of the country, you all have a different, completely different rituals.
Exactly.
And
so
roots.
Yeah, exactly. So it seems to me interesting to be guided somewhat by that complexity, by that multiplicity, by the sophistication that inevitably comes from that cosmopolitan position. If we begin from there, then the story of what is Africa or African is an open proposition rather than a singular idea or something authentic or fixed.
Okay. I want to ask you about Afrofuturism.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I got really interested to read this word, Afrofuturism, which has only started what?
Well, it's a concept from the 1990s, let's say.
Yeah. So how did this come about? About, I mean, talking about, I mean, rituals, myth, and...
Well, so Afrofuturism is an idea. It's coined at the, end of the it's kind of 1990s. It's an idea that...
Why in 1990s did it come up with Afrofuturism?
It was a theorist kind of came up with the idea, and it kind of became popular because it was a way of talking about Black people that didn't reduce people of African origin, Black people, to a historic past. So the context for this is that, historically speaking, in the Western imagination, Black people have often been constructed as if they belong somehow to the pre-modern, to the uncivilized, to the outside of history, rather than progress into the future. So Afrofuturism as a concept overturns that and suggests that as an imaginative pursuit, we can construct an idea of Blackness as a future-facing endeavor and experience. The works that come out of that often relate to science fiction, but also can go broader than that, into fable, into myth, into speculation. So I think...
So you agree with this?
Well, I mean, interestingly, so...
Yeah.
I did an exhibition a couple of years ago at the Hayward Gallery in London. Called In the Black Fantastic.
Fantastic.
And this was a group show that brought together, again, artists from across the diaspora, people like Nick Cave, Kara Walker, Chris Ofili, Ellen Gallagher, significant artists. Artists whose work in some forms embraced myth or speculative fiction as a way of challenging the, I think, kind of racialized ways that Black people are confined in popular imagination. Interesting, for me, that wasn't an Afrofuturism show, because one of the things that actually I get a little bit exercised about...
Yeah.
Is the idea that to offer a kind of counterpoint to popular ideas of Black underdevelopment, you have to think about African futurity. You have to think about Black people in the future. You have to think about Black people in relation to technology.
Yes.
I'm more interested in the fantastic rather than the futurist. And by the fantastic, I mean works and ideas that embrace myth, speculation, belief systems, knowledge systems, historic notions of cosmology and place. Interested in the ways that artists, it seems to me, have been actually drawing on a much broader cosmology of images and references than just the futurist. So this is what I try to bring together with In the Black Fantastic, a show that seemed to me rich in its imagery, rich in its ideas, that reached back in time as much as it reached forward in time. If we think about someone like Wangechi Mutu, it's a fantastic, extraordinary artist, Kenyan origin, based in the US. Her work, her imagery, it deals with African deities and fictional figures,
exactly,
as much as it does conjure these extraordinary speculative dreamings. So I wanted to say, look, there's more going on here than just Afrofuturism. There's something, there's a richer terrain. There's a stranger, there's a more fantastic set of worlds being explored through some of this work.
Absolutely right. So now... Talk about the current show in the Philadelphia Museum. Artists reframe Black figures.
Oh, yes.
How does, 60 artists there? Tell us more about that
show. So the current show that I have at the moment is called The Time Is Always Now.
Yeah, Time Is Always There.
Artists Reframe the Black Figure. So this is a group show that opened at the National Portrait Gallery in London in 2024. It's currently touring in the US. As we speak, it's at the Philadelphia Museum of Art. It's about to go to the North Carolina Museum of Contemporary Art. There's actually, I mean, there's 60 or more works in the show. I think there's 20 to 24, something like that, artists in the show. Now, the goal with the show is to look at artists that are working with figuration, artists that are working with the black figure, chiefly in painting, also drawing, sometimes sculpture, and to think about what they're doing, because it's my contention that they're doing more than simply trying to reflect, as it were, the figure as we might know it. Like, let's stand back for a moment. If you think now across the course of art history, we can go back to the 17th or 18th to the 19th century. All these different times in the past, there have been representations of the black figure.
Yeah.
Cropped up in many works. But historically, those representations of the black figure have been created by Western artists, by white artists, just the history of art. In the 20th century, we start to see a shift, we start to see a change, the black artists that come to the fore. Now, we're in the 21st century. What do we see? We see a whole range of artists, Kerry James Marshall, Amy Sherald, Noah Davis, Henry Taylor, all of these artists creating works of extraordinary acuity, depth, sensitivity, and beauty, and doing so from a position that does not involve simply looking at the black figure, which is what historically has taken place in Western art, but looking with or from the perspective of the black subject. This is the shift that I want to illustrate in this show. So we see from the position of the artist or their subject. And in that respect, what we open up to then is a realm of interiority, of complexity, of extraordinary depth and sensitivity. That's the shift that's taking place right now. And that's what The Time Is Always Now tries to capture as an exhibition.
How wonderful. And then this exhibition is now going to, after this, Philadelphia is Caroline.
Yeah, in North Carolina, yeah.
North Carolina.
As we've been saying, the point about these shows is that they open up space for reflection, contemplation, conversation. This is the goal of the show. The goal of the show is to bring together these artists, but no exhibition makes sense, functions, is anything without its audience.
Of course, absolutely right.
Trying to create a space where we can see blackness as a site of possibility, as a site of dreaming, as a site of extraordinary reaching and beauty. That's what these artists do, and that's what we're trying to share.
Okay, so then your next show in May is in the Baltimore Museum, and it's called what? Black Earth Rising. But then you're not just doing African artists. There's Latin American and there's Native Indian artists.
Yeah.
Just talk. Yeah, tell man. Us
we
more.
We keep going, eh?
Tell us more.
So the next show that I have, I've been working on for the last, whatever it is, couple of years, is a show called Black Earth Rising. It's at the Baltimore Museum of Art, opens in May. It's a group show that looks at the complex links between colonialism and climate change, as seen through the work of artists of African diasporic, Latin American, and Native American origin, which is to say, artists whose origins lie with groups and communities who've experienced different aspects of settler colonialism, of extractivism, of exploitation, but who respond through their work to these histories with actually works that embrace nature as a site of fraughtness and fragility, but also extraordinary beauty.
Of course.
So Teresita Fernandez, Fieri Baez, Frank Bolin is in the show.
I like Frank Bolin.
Yeah. And if we think about their works, they have an extraordinary facility with colour, sometimes with abstraction, sometimes with figuration. They deal in history, presence, the beauty and fragility of landscape, memory, colonial violence. All of these things are in play, but we're also thinking about how we have got to the fraught place of the planet in the 21st century, a heating planet, a warming planet. And one of the points I suppose I wanted to explore in the show is often when we talk about climate change, we do so from the perspective of the Northern Hemisphere. So much of the imagery around climate change is polar bears and icebergs. But actually, the majority of the impact of climate change is on the developing world, is on the global south. And so by bringing together artists whose origins lie within different parts of the global south, what we actually see is a different visual aesthetic come into play, which is not about the north, but actually has at its heart just kind of visual cues that lead us towards the tropical, the equatorial, again, the southern hemisphere. So
I think the show is a little bit different from your show.
Yeah.
Show. So it makes it really exciting because you bring three separate, very different culture together, and all has gone through a post-colonial moments.
Exactly. So I'm not saying that everyone has shared exactly the same sets of experience and history, but they do share an experience of these colonial pasts. And so when you bring those works together, the challenge with any group show is, can you create an environment that seems to have a fluency to it, where the artworks of one artist can speak to the art of another artist? Yeah. So that's really the challenge. That's what still working on, and I hope it will make sense aesthetically as an overall show, so that the proposition of the show is fully realized in the experience of the show. That's the goal. I'm excited so far in the ways that it's developing. I've got a book that I've done to accompany the show as well, which allows us to go. I mean, it's visually led, so it's got about 200 images in it, but it allows us to go beyond the physical confines of an exhibition to draw in much more work.
Do you ever have any free time? Yeah, because you're doing that and then you just publish a book as well.
So, right? Yeah.
I mean, do you have time or not?
You're asking that question, that question of you also.
By the way, this morning I just bought an Eccles book. Why don't you talk about The Strangers? But you're talking about this five men that we all know.
Okay, all right.
So why choose this five men? Well, why is it called The Strangers?
So I have a book.
This is from art to writing.
Yeah. So I have a book. It's a nonfiction book that was published. It's just come out. It's published in the UK towards the end of last year. It comes out in the US in May this year. It's called The Strangers. Subtitled Five Extraordinary Black Men and the Worlds That Made Them. This is a similar territory to what we've been talking about to some extent. I'm interested in black being and black presence. And in this book, I take the lives of five different black men from different points in history, some of them well-known like Malcolm X or Frantz Fanon, others less well known, like Ira Aldridge, who was a Shakespearean actor on the London stage in the early 19th century, or Matthew Henson, who was the first person to reach the North Pole. He was an explorer. I take each of their lives and I look at some aspect, a particular time period in their lives, sometimes weeks, sometimes months or years. I'm interested not so much in what they did, but how they experienced and saw and walked through a world that was hostile to them. And so to do that, I've tried to imagine my way into their lives. So the book is nonfiction, but I speculate somewhat on how they might have imagined the territories around them. So I imagine my way into their lives, because to some extent, the historical record about them for someone like Malcolm X is rich, for others is thinner. But in each case, I was guided by something that Toni Morrison said. Toni Morrison said that Black people are often the objects of history rather than the subjects of history.
Object of history.
Yeah, rather than the subjects of history. So I wanted to think subjectively about these people. So I imagine my way into their lives, into their worlds, in order, hopefully, to come to a closer sense of their sensibility and way of seeing and way of being. And then I'm in there as well, somewhat. So in between these chapters about them, there's some shorter essays where I just kind of think about my own relationship to these subjects.
When you write a book like this,
yeah,
you could not do different project. Because it's very, it's very involved.
Yeah.
You're talking about all these historical figures. You actually have to do research.
Yeah.
You have to immerse into it. So when do you create your show? Did you write or do you?
Well, I mean, it's a good question.
You cannot put yourself out and do another project.
So I don't know about you. I mean, look, I don't know about you, but. And basically, look, The Strangers took 5 years to write. Simultaneous to writing The Strangers, I was working on these exhibitions that we've been talking about.
Exactly.
Do them all at the same time, because in a way I'm trying to explore different facets of a similar thing. We began this conversation, I was talking about being young and finding myself kind of somewhat at odds with the world around me, trying to understand how I could live, trying to understand how I could live without feeling that I was being denied a place somewhere, trying to find a way to be. This is what I still do. In terms of writing a book, curating exhibitions, you say different things with those, but similar things, such that some of the time I'm thinking in terms of prose and writing, some of the time I'm thinking visually, but all of the time I'm trying to understand the fraughtness and fragility of living and being and walking through the world.
Even your exhibitions is about that.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly. So we've been talking about this next time I'm doing Black Earth Rising, about colonialism and climate change. This also is about remains interested in displacement, remains interested in the experience of othering. It's not that I can't do other things, but these seem to me interesting subjects. Mm. Interesting subjects that also I'm interested in the ways that I'm interested in how I think about that and explore that, hence writing. But I'm also interested then in what I can see and share and the kind of conversations I have with different artists and the worlds that they're describing. I'm quite curious about stuff. So, and it seems to me there's a lot of stuff to be curious about. And so a lot of this originates from me and my personal interests, fascinations, preoccupations. But it's also about the capacity and the joy of creating environments and having conversations. Conversations like this one, also as much as everything else. So all of this, the joy of this is that it gets me out of my head. It gets me into conversation and communion with other people who see extraordinary things.
So do you mean that right when you do all these projects, it's like a self-discovery as well?
I mean, it can't not be. The thing is
therapeutical.
Well, yeah, I mean, I try to think about that in egotistic terms, in that one of the joys I have is looking and thinking and being inspired by the work that other people do. And that stuff helps, it very selfishly, that helps me. It helps me orient my way through a world. But it's also deeply exciting,
of course,
to be able to spend time looking.
And also, artworks. You create questions on people's, on all the viewers, makes them think.
Yeah, exactly. And this,
and that's what really art is about. It makes you think.
Yeah, of course.
When you look at something, it has to help you to think about other things.
Of course, of course. And the, look, the brilliant thing with all of this stuff is that I have answers. I have answers to anything. But, yeah, you have the opportunity to ask questions. You have the opportunity to create environments where we might explore. And that seems to me something exciting and worthwhile.
I like it.
Glad.
Okay, so, and so tell me, what is your future plan?
Oh.
Yeah, what is your next few years? What is your plan?
I mean, there's lots of things I haven't done yet. There's lots of things.
I think all these exhibitions is really exciting, and your book is great because it takes it in and into another angle.
Yeah.
So what is your next few years plan? Because the world is changing.
Yeah, I know.
You know, whether we like it or not, it is evolving. So what you do and what your question is, it seems to have now answers coming to you, and there is obstacles and there's that, but it's much easier.
Well,
go around this whole.
I mean, I feel there's more to explore. There's more shows to do.
Of course.
There's more writing to do. I want to make some films.
Oh, have you ever made any films?
No, but that's not a reason not to do that.
Oh, this is the exciting thing.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. Like, I feel that there's more. So, look, this is the thing. The premise I start from, with pretty much everything, is a premise of not knowing. And by that, I mean that I try not to take for granted the world around me. I try not to take for granted the idea that, well, this is, I don't know, you know, this is Britain. We know it. We know who people are. We know how we live. I try and start with a question mark about the texture of our times. I'm interested in how we can articulate the complexity and what seems to me the inherent strangeness of being alive. I can always, I'm very, very struck by the fact that if we go back historically at any moment in time, 10 years, 50 years, 500 years, it's easier to recognize the oddness of a given period in the past.
Of course. You know, I was thinking that, you mm-hmm. know, if you're doing all this, even 50 years ago,
yeah.
no one would give a, would care about it.
Yeah.
Right? Black, who cares? You know, you know, black, yellow, like all of us, you are the below.
Mm-hmm.
Below.
Exactly.
I mean, yeah. But now, in this world, we start looking at culture, mm-hmm. looking at colors.
Mm.
I mean, we want to give this equality. We want to learn about different culture. Mm. So it's all different.
It's all different, yes. Doesn't necessarily make it
balance.
Yeah.
Equal.
Exactly.
There's no equality. Come on, we have to admit that there's no equality.
So then what do we do? So we carry on looking. We carry on searching. We carry on trying to make sense of all of this. And we recognize that, yeah, maybe it doesn't make sense, but that does not invalidate the searching and the looking. And this is really what I try and do. I'm interested in the texture of the everyday.
And you always give a different point of view, which is the most important thing.
Yeah.
Different perspective.
Yeah.
Because your shows is giving a perspective. You're writing the book. You're showing the different perspective of these men.
Yeah.
Of their life.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly that. And I don't know. I don't even know what the words are sometimes. But what I'm most interested in is, let's just not take it for granted. Let's not go along as if there's only one inevitable way to see, to speak. this is how we end up with, I don't know, the politics that we have. Yeah. Let's stand up for the individuality of our experience and our perception of being. Let's try and recognize and share our individual complexity. Let's celebrate the richness and difference of each of us together, alone, separately, and in company, and in communion, and in conversation.
Bravo. I love it. I love this. The world is turning. And what do you think about the next turning point? Do you think that people here, everywhere, they are going to understand, they're going to embrace blackness, celebrating? And because, you know, when I went to Africa, the most interesting, the most intriguing thing for me is, I mean, when you talk to everybody, they talk to me about tribes. Mm-hmm. They talk about their rituals. And I went to Ghana as well. And I thought the art scene in Ghana was interesting, but it's not as interesting as Nigeria.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think with one big artist in Ghana, many younger artists, they just want to copy the same thing. When I was in Nigeria, I went to different studios. They all did different things, different, you know, different aesthetic, different approach to art. So you go back to Ghana because it's like your old home. Mm-hmm. It's like your family. What do you think about that?
I mean, I don't know Nigeria that well in terms of its art scene. The Ghanaian art scene, I'm having a really good time with at the moment. Because, yeah, there's a lot of artists, younger artists, inspired by Amwaka Boafo, for instance.
How many artists I went, they all paint more or less the same.
He's the leading contemporary artist in Ghana right now. But he's not the only one. In fact, I go there and I see people, you know, I see people like Gideon Apple or Kwesi Botchwe, or you can go to the north of Ghana and see what Ibrahim Mahama is doing. He's an extraordinary installation artist, an artist
he's
that works
really
in space.
He's really a great installation artist.
And so if you look carefully, it's not, you actually see this breadth and diversity of work taking place. Ellen Natsui, who for years was based in Nigeria, has gone back to Ghana in his
80s. I know. I went to his studio as well. It's amazing.
It's extraordinary.
It's amazing.
It's a 40-meter long studio.
Yeah,
it's
huge. Amazing. It's really
so
amazing.
I'm actually pretty excited by what I see in Ghana. And overall, let's say this in kind of more expansive terms. I think one of the things that's really interesting to me, and one of the reasons why I've done some of the shows I've done, like The Time Is Always Now, for instance, is I'm interested in the ways that any successful artist, really of any kind, one of the points about their success is that they have their own individual visual language.
Yes.
You know, it's why artists that are copying aren't interesting. Artists that are original and individual.
But that takes confidence.
Yes, of course it does. Of course it does. But this is the job. The job is to speak on your own terms. That's really the role of the artist, to figure out a way of speaking and seeing, articulating their own individual position in ways that others haven't done before. It's a very difficult job to do, but that's what they do. So I find it very interesting. And overall, then, what I see in Ghana, or what I see here in Britain, or traveling, if you're looking, and let's take sticking just to black artists for a minute, what I'm interested in are these different ways. All of these artists demonstrate the possibility of speaking with nuance, with depth, with complexity, with imaginative reach about blackness as a proposition. Blackness is in the end, it's a lived experience, but it's also an idea.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
You know, race, scientifically speaking, race doesn't exist. There's no genetic difference between people of different skin colours other than the physical nature of that color.
Right.
But race exists as an imaginary that we all share. And the role...
I think race exists because it's about control.
Yeah. Yes, completely. Yeah. Completely that.
Yeah.
Completely that. Race is invented as an idea to determine, to define the difference
the
between
the superior and exactly. the inferiority, exactly. the sense exactly. of control.
Exactly. All of these things. We live within that as an idea. And so the role of imaginative people and creative people, artists, writers, is then to say, well, what can we, if we cannot eradicate this, what can we make of it? And how then can we speak with a complexity that allows us to elucidate a position that is otherwise described as lesser? How can we get to the richness of that? How can we get to the nuance of that? How can we get to the beauty of that? This is what so much of the work does. This is what I take so much inspiration from. Writers, this is what they do. Toni Morrison and so on. Artists are so interesting because artists speak without words.
Yes.
They show us possibility. And then they leave the space for us to articulate what that might mean for us on our own terms. And this is the world, or this is one of the worlds I live in, where we look at these images, let's say Kara James Marshall. We look at the images of Kara James Marshall and we discover ways of seeing and ways of being that can take us inside ourselves and then take us back out into the world with a sense of that complexity, of that possibility of blackness as an untrammeled, unknown, endlessly generative terrain, as a terrain of discovery that we can still keep walking in. That's the world that I'm interested in exploring. That's what I try and do with my exhibitions. That's what I try and do as a writer. I try and talk about blackness as a site of possibility, of endless being, endless becoming. Stuart Hall, the great scholar and theorist, said something once. He said that identity is not a fixed proposition. Identity, he said, is a matter of becoming as well as being. Identity, he said, is an unfinished conversation that is always in process, always in progress, that shifts according to the times around us. The unfinished conversation is a conversation about who we are in the world. I'm dedicated. Bravo. I'm dedicated to that conversation.
I love
and,
that.
And I'm enjoying this conversation too.
What a wonderful time we have together, Echo.
Thank you so much,
Thank you. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you.